Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Hi, friends, and welcome to the Papaya Podcast. I'm your hostess, trying her mostest, Sarah Nicole, and each week I'm going to be dishing out some sweetness mixed in with some seeds of wisdom or something like that. So get ready to get inspired, get candid, get real, because we are all in this digital space together.
We have had so many different guests and stories on here when it comes to making a family, whether it was from infertility, single motherhood by choice. We've had so many. Oh, even surrogacy. We had a whole episode on surrogacy before. And today is sort of like a crossover episode of a lot of those things. Today, I'm welcoming Joseph Tito from The Dad Diaries. We met years ago at a conference and I immediately adore him. He is one of those people that is very magnetic, very fun to follow. And I remember him going through this journey of surrogacy as he chose to be a single dad and raise a family and share his success with a new generation. And so, as it often happens, it wasn't so easy. So today we're having Joseph on the episode to kind of share his journey through choosing this path and the complications that came along the way and where he is now, where everything is now. So I'm so excited for you to hear this story because I truly have never sat down with him to hear it in full. So you're going to be hearing it for the first time along with me, even though I have a little bit more insight from following him on Instagram for years and seeing it on the news. Yes, this was a newsworthy kind of story. All right, let's get into the show. All right, we're ready for this. I was just saying, I've never actually heard this full story. I've only ever known you from passing, from meeting, from following each other online. But this is like a really cool opportunity. I sort of feel in some ways there are stories that are in our lives that define us and people sort of move past them. They're like these big, big things in our lives and everyone's just ready to move on from them. And it's really, you're years down past all of this. And I think it's a really important thing to go back in and talk about it. Now that you've been able to move through it a little bit, now we get to go back into your story and learn. So first of all, welcome to the show. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So let's get into it. Let's go a little bit more back because I want to get into, first of all, your why. You're not the first person that has chosen single parenthood right off the bat. We've had a previous guest before, and I think it's a very interesting conversation. Just like we're seeing the rise in people going child-free by choice, we're also seeing the rise in parenthood by choice, even single parenthood by choice. So talk to me about your life before and what brought you to this really big life decision.
Well, okay. So I was an executive producer and director, and I was living in the Middle East at the time, making a shitload of money, traveling the world, Dubai on weekends, Istanbul, Rome, and nothing. I was in my hotel in the Burj Khalifa, and I think like the sun was rising. I just had partied and I was looking out the window on the 57th floor. And I'm like, there has to be more to life than this. Like I have everything. I could buy anything I want, but I just felt empty. Mm. And then I come from a very Italian traditional. I was born in Rome. So like, you know, we grow up with, you know, find the love of your life, get married, have children. And so that kind of never happened for me, but I always wanted children. I always wanted a dad. I felt it, you know, very important in my life. And nothing. And on that night, morning, I remember I was like, okay, this is it. I've always said, I was like, by the time I'm 35, I'm going to be a dad. I was like 37 at the time. I'm like, okay, it's now or never, because I don't want to be a 65-year-old with a toddler.
I mean, sorry, Al Pacino and Robert De Niro right now, who are literally in their 70s and 80s just becoming dads. I also don't want that for me. So I get it.
So, yeah. So then that was when I kind of started researching, and I researched into adoption. But then as a single gay male, it's close to impossible. So then nothing. I looked into surrogacy, and there was this Indian agency that was promoting same-sex couples or single males that they could, you know, do it. And so I dove into it. And here I am with twins.
With twins. It wasn't that simple, though. First of all, was it you ended up with a surrogate who lived where?
So I went through, we did it in Kenya. So the surrogate was in Kenya.
Okay.
And no, it wasn't. Well, first of all, before she even got pregnant, I went through 5 embryo transfers. And
oh, wow. I mean,
it's brutal. Like, you just feel like a failure. You feel like, you know, you're killing something, right? Like, your embryos that are babies and they're not taking. And so then by the fourth one, you're like, okay, God does not want me to be a dad. Like, it's obvious that this is not in my cards. But then the agency reached out. They're like, no, you need to change egg donors. And so I changed the egg donor, and then boom, she got pregnant. And then 21 days later, I found out that there were twins, and I was like, oh my God, I'm a single dad. Like, what am I going to do? Like, the first thing I thought of was like, two universities. I'm going to be working for the rest of my life.
Do you know what I love about that, though, is that you questioned whether it was the right thing or like whether you were supposed to do this. And then instead life was like, boom, boom, we give you two.
Exactly. Right?
Like, that's kind of a neat part. But when you were going through that part of like the embryo failures or loss, a lot of people find community. This is such a niche thing. Did you even have community anybody that you could relate with?
No, that's why I started the Dad Diaries. It started as a blog, and I started writing my experiences for gay men, but I mean, I get contacted by even women. There's a lot of women who can't give birth, and it's something they don't want to talk about. And it's, you know, feel like a failure as a woman. So they reach out to me, because I actually, after this third failed embryo transfer, I stopped telling people, just because like people are just, they don't get it. And it was like, people would say like, oh, third time's a charm, or like stupid saying, like, and I was just like, no, I don't want anyone to know. I closed off, and the only people that were my parents. And it's not easy, like, for men, let alone like for women that can't get birth. It's not a subject that people want to talk about. And so that's why I started the Dad Diaries. Like, it started as kind of like an information for people, kind of letting them know my experience. And, you know, and it's good to hear from someone that is going through it or has gone through it, because I mean, you're sending 40,000 American across the world somewhere to start, you know, and it's like, where is it going? Is it, you know, legit? Is it like, there's so many things. I mean, it's a baby you're talking about. It's not like, you know, potatoes at a market.
So let's go forward. It's a success. You're having twins. First of all, I want to know, how did your family react? Was your family supportive of this? Were they excited?
Oh yeah.
Because I don't care about what the world says yet. I want to know what the Italian family had to say.
So okay. At first I told my mom, and she was, yes, all about it. Obviously, yeah. To be like a nonna, and like, she's very Italian, and was amazing support. I didn't tell my dad because I wasn't sure how he would react, but then he kind of like heard it from my mom and came on the phone and was like so excited, and he was super excited. Wow. Was like, you know, so that the first thing I did when I saw, like, I saw two heartbeats, and I'm like, oh, okay, so they measured it in the morning and at night, like, I don't know. So I'm reading, and I'm like, twin pregnancy confirmed. And I was like, oh my God. So I remember it was like 3 o'clock in the morning in Canada. So I was just sitting in Bahrain in the Middle East, looking at the screen for like 3 hours. I waited till 6 in the morning. First thing I did, called my parents, and my dad picked up and I'm like, "Papa, it's twins." And he's like, "That's amazing." I'm like, "What do you mean? That's amazing. That's two universities. I'm by myself. I don't know." He's like, "It's okay. It's okay." But I also let me tell you that my dad does not know anything about babies. When we were babies, he was working. He wasn't home. He wasn't. And so he's like, okay, I'll pass you your mom. I'll pass you your mom. So my mom comes on the phone. I'm like, "Ma, they're twins." Silence.
Oh my God.
I'm like, "Ma?" She's like, no, I heard what you said. I need a moment." And she hangs up the phone.
Oh my God.
I'm like, "What do you mean?" So, cause she like, no.
That just helps all the anxiety of the whole situation. You're like, okay, mom hung up the phone. That's how serious.
Well, because she knows what it's like to have babies, right?
Yes, and now we're
going to
have
two. And she knows that she's going to be a huge part of the, like, baby's lives, and she's going to help me. And nothing. She was excited. She was just like literally sleeping and was like, "I need to process," and nothing. So actually when I went to Kenya, 2 weeks before the girls were born, my mom came with me. Oh. And then, that's when all hell broke loose after they were born.
Yes.
And so that's a whole different.
Yeah, we'll get into that in a moment. Because that's what I was saying. I was like, this was a story that made major news. It was a big thing. But let's get into the fact that it's twins. Were two embryos implanted, or was it one that split into identical?
No. It was two embryos. So they implanted two embryos at a time. And so, but they had the same placenta, which is not common, the same.
Oh, pack. So they're, what's that called? Die twins, which is like usually riskier or something, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So mom, a surrogate parent, is pregnant. She's about to give birth. You've made it over there. Talk to me about the actual birth experience. Where were you? Like, what was your role in it? Were you sort of, I don't understand how a lot of that stuff works. And I realize it's probably very individual as well.
Yeah. So 10 days before I left, the agency called me and said, "A woman has to come with you," like not my mom, but a woman has to come with you, or else they won't give you the baby. So I was like, "What do you mean? First you're advertising same-sex couples and single male. And now," so thank God I had one of my best friends lives in Bahrain. She's a Saudi and like was relatively close to Kenya. So she came down. And nothing, like the birth, like at first they told me that I could be there. And then, so we're waiting at home and they should have been born at 2 p.m. And then at 12:45 from the, I get a message from the counselor, the lady that like the middleman, kind of like, mm-hmm, I had a problem, I would talk to her and she would talk to the agency. She worked for the agency. She's like, "Congratulations, you're a dad." I'm like, "What are you talking about?" And she sent me two pictures of the girls screaming. And I'm like,
what
the hell is going on? So we went into a tuk-tuk, which is like, we're Kenya, third world country. Yeah. And like, go to the hospital. And again, like Leslie had to be with me. And like, so finally we go there and they show us the babies. And I'm like, I remember counting their toes and counting their fingers and all of them. And one was screaming. One was like, looked like a little Buddha. I'm like, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I saw them, I named them and they took them away. And that was it. I went home. I was like, now what? And very different from Canada. Like they would have gone into the NICU for a bit. They were like, the next day I went, they're like, "Just put them out in the sun in the morning and they'll be fine," because they had John, like they were like preemies, right? But very, very different. And so the next day I went, I got them, two days later they got to come home with me. And then that's when kind of everything started happening. I had issues getting my name on the birth certificate. So it was like fighting with the judge in Kenya. And then I find out that they wanted like to be bribed. They wanted money. I'm like, well, if I would have done that in Canada, I would have got arrested. So anyways, finally I got my on the birth certificate and then it was time to come back. So I brought them from Mombasa to Kenya. we did all their paperwork at the Canadian embassy, and everything was fine. And then they, two days before we had to leave, we went back. I brought them back to Mombasa. We were waiting there. 2 days before we had to leave, my mom's like, well, they haven't got back to us. Let's just go to Nairobi with the babies. We'll like stay at a hotel there and then we'll leave the next day. So we get to the embassy and they're like, no, they don't get their citizenship because you, because I was born in Italy to a Canadian mom. So I was considered second generation Canadian. And so they wouldn't give them the citizenship. And they said, you're going to have to sponsor them, which meant that I would have had to stay in Kenya for 8 months to a year because or else. And so, yeah. So then luckily it went viral. And like I have a bunch of amazing followers, like all the Ginas in Woodbridge that were like fighting for me. And they like bombarded the embassy with emails. And I mean, Trudeau emailed me. It was just, yeah. And then finally the embassy was like, okay, take a temporary travel document and leave the country. I'm like, absolutely. So thank God I was on social media. And yeah, and then we, so 2 months later, we were allowed to leave. The girls were stateless for about a year. And then they finally got their permanent residency. And then a year later, got their Canadian citizenship.
So two parts of this question. First part, do you feel like through this process, the desire to become a dad maybe blinded you to some of these blind spots that were coming down the road? Or do you think that it was just, there's no way you could have known? Because you were saying like they marketed towards that this was going to work. And then all of a sudden you're like being hit with like all of this new information that never was there.
No, that's the thing. So before the girls were even the girls, as soon as I started, like before the first embryo transfer, I contacted the embassy. I sent them my passport. I sent them my citizenship. I said, listen, because I knew about the law.
Wow.
Harper had just passed it in 2017. So I sent them my stuff and they're like, no, you're fine. I even have that email from them. And I even, when I was there, was like, look at your email. This is your mistake. Because if I would have known, I would have like, trust me, when you're going through surrogacy, there's so much planning and so much research. And like, it's not like, you know, my girlfriend or my wife just got, oh, I'm pregnant. Like, no, it's years of planning. It's dotting your T, it's crossing your T, dotting your I's. Like, so that's why, like, it wasn't the whole thing about then needing a woman. That was, I got blindsided because first you're advertising one thing, and then all of a sudden, and then it's not that it's, you know, up the street, like, it's in Kenya, which is, I don't know. It was brutal. And it was just an experience where I remember going back to the hotel after spending 8 hours at the embassy, and the night before traveling with the girls, my mom was just exhausted and passed out on the bed. Mia was sleeping. Stella was crying. And I remember having her in my arms and feeling, oh my God, I failed as a father. They were just born and already I failed as a father. It was just a brutal experience. And again, would I change anything? No, because I have Stella and Mia and I love them more than anything in this world. And I would not change anything. But that's what I tell people when they contact me and say, you know, what should I do? I just get a lawyer, get an immigration lawyer. Just make sure you have everything in order, because the last thing you want to do is be stuck in a country like Kenya or any other country, but especially a third world country, and not with your babies and not come home.
So let me ask another technical question, because I'm sure people are wondering the same. Is there opportunity for somebody who's a gay single dad to surrogate in Canada? Was that ever a possibility? Yeah. Okay.
There is. It's very expensive.
Yeah.
And also the laws here in Canada and the US are still, they were written in 1982.
Oh, wow.
So basically the surrogate mother, even though the DNA is not hers, so the egg is from another woman.
Yes, exactly.
the semen's from me, and
yeah.
It's put into another woman, the surrogate. Yes. Even though it's not her DNA, they have all the power.
Okay.
Meaning that if she gives birth and she decides to keep the baby, it's her right to keep the baby. And then alimony, like child support.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's very complex. So yeah, I can understand why you would have researched for different places and why you came to that decision. So using social media really is what got you out of this like very, very big pickle. Let's just put it lightly. However, I'm watching people go through, I mean, I'm sure you've seen that couple on TikTok who just had a gay couple who had twins via surrogacy, and the social media has been kind to them and also brutally, brutally harsh to them in very, very awful, awful ways. When you went very loud and very viral, it's weird to say that, I mean, those years ago were quite different from now and that we've progressed somehow worse, but I feel like those years ago, did you face a lot of brutal hate in the efforts to bring your daughters home? Did you also have to face that side of it? And I feel like this is all so hard because there is you who made the decision to have these babies. You have these babies and you're not even really getting a chance to be a dad. You're having to travel. You're having to bounce around. You're having to do all this legal stuff. I'm sure there's been a lot of grief over the joy that you lost and the opportunity that you lost through that time. But kind of talk to me about how you managed sort of your one tool that you had, which was going viral with this, but also knowing that that was sort of walking into a whole world of hate too, and things that you maybe, I don't know if anybody can ever possibly be prepared for, but that one is really a character questioning one. And I've seen it happen to people now. So I'm wondering what that was for you.
Oh no, I get it. I get that all the time, but being in the public eye, you good and the bad, right? Unfortunately, the bad sticks, whereas the good kind of like, oh, okay. And you move on. And then that one bad comment, or like, I remember she was a doula, which meaning that she deals with babies, and from Middle America somewhere, she wrote, not only did you kill 4 babies, but what you're doing is sinful. So because I went through 5 embryo transfers, right? So, and I remember that one comment and I'm like, you know, already you feel like shit, like when stuff like that happens, and then just those comments. And now I'm getting more worse comments now.
Yeah.
Than back then.
I was going to ask,
2018, there wasn't this all of a sudden, let's all hate on everybody. Like, I don't know what happened, but something's changed. But you do get them. You do get them. And unfortunately, like I said, those stick. Even now, like my partner now, well, my soon to be husband now, just says, you know, let them go. Like, don't even read them. Don't even let them. But that's, It takes a while. It takes a while. Like the whole thing with the flag that's happening.
Yeah.
That whole week, or every time something happens with the LGBTQ community, people reach out to me because I'm they want me to be a voice. And sometimes it kills me for the whole week. It kills me. And then I'm not a good parent because I am so angry that I'm taking it out. I'm not taking it out on the girls, but you know, you're just so in that zone that sucks, right?
Yeah.
But what are you going to do? That's the price you pay, right? I mean, it's the same thing for you. Like, I'm sure
you get
your positive.
But I get it. Yeah. It's sort of like the way that you say it sticks. Like, all I envisioned when you said that was there's all these people patting you on the back as you sort of go through life. And then there's people who throw darts. And it does. It sticks. It has this way of just getting into a deep point. And it's like the stuff that I saw somebody yesterday, one of my favorite podcasters, and she just made this little post that said, you know, you all comment and say how annoying my voice is, but I have to live with it for the rest of my life. You can pause the podcast. And I was like, yes, things like that, that make you sort of like nitpick at the things that you've already processed, you've already gone through, you've already had to grieve the traditional family. The fact that you can't just go and, you know, get pregnant, you've already had to go through that process. Then not having somebody to do this with that would have upped your chances of potentially an adoption. You had so much against you and your heart to just be a dad. It was sort of
misconstrued and manipulated and put to be something else. And I've watched you show up time and time again with so much love and so much compassion. And I'm so glad that even though the darts have been in your back, that you continue to move forward, because those girls, how old are they now, first of all?
They're four.
And yeah. You went through, do you remember? I remember, well, of course you remember, but I remember when they were like, you now are like the single dad of two, but that didn't remove your desire to meet a partner. So what was dating? You know what? I don't want to jump ahead. I know I'm doing it, but I'm excited. First of all, talk to me about, beyond all the complications, talk to me about the reality of being a single dad of twins. What was that life like? Was it a blur? Do you even remember?
The first 6 months, I cried every day. I don't even remember if it was day or night. But I cried just waking them up every 3 hours, feeding them. Yeah. And then luckily, I had my parents. So I literally I had a loft in the city. I had plate. I moved into my parents. I built a 2-bedroom apartment in the basement. And thank God for my parents, because they would go to sleep really late. So mm-hmm. I would feed them at 9 o'clock. Then they would feed them at 12, put them into bed, and then I would wake up at 3 and then wake up at 6. So I had that, at least that little bit of help, because yeah. if I would have done it completely by myself, I would have, but I remember thinking like, what the hell did I do? Did I really want this? It's hard. I mean, you know,
babies are cute for a reason. Babies are cute for a reason. It's so hard. And it's so hard to I get that when we see, I understand why we have to show the reality of parenthood. And I also, you don't want to scare people when they're about to go in it. And then you're also there's something about watching your kids sleep. And that's because they're so well behaved. They're not crying. They're just adorable and asleep. And we need that. We need that moment to be it's worth it. And it's okay. But crying in the in-betweens, I think those first 6 months are truly, and I've only ever had singletons. Twins, I mean, double the blur. I can't imagine, but it's also, I know for you, so layered, because you had all of this buildup and everything. And it's where do I even let these tears go? Am I allowed to talk about that? This is hard. Is there a place for me in this conversation? That's tough. And so, talk to me about the point where you realized that you still wanted to date. And what did that look like with twins? Did you approach the conversation right off the bat that you were a single father?
No. Like I said, the first 6 months were I was in my onesie, and I didn't even know my name, let alone thinking about dating. All I wanted to do was sleep. Any 2 minutes that I would sleep. And I didn't even think about that after. See, the thing with me is that being a single parent, it's shit, I got to work.
Yeah.
I have to giddy up now. I got to mm-hmm. provide for these two. And I had just moved from the Middle East. I closed up my production in the Middle East, moved back here. Luckily, I had a cushion that mm-hmm. I had for myself that I could have the 6 months that I needed. But after 6 months, I'm I got to work. So first of all, that started. So I'm got a nanny. I needed a nanny because I'm if I go to work, what am I going to do? My mom's there, she can't do it by herself. And
for sure.
So I got the nanny, and then I started working. So once work started going and I kind of got my feet back on the ground, mm-hmm. that's when I was I need something. Not just dating, but you also need human contact. You need, to get hugged every once in a while or something. So then I started dating, and obviously you do the apps and the this and the that, and it's brutal. Dating
is
brutal. Well, first of all, dating is already brutal. Then add kids on top of it, because it's not saying, let's go to dinner anytime. Yeah. Or I'm going to meet you for a drink. Or it's no, I got a plan.
I went through that. I remember it was difficult to get somebody to convince somebody to have dinner after the kids were in bed, or to always have the layer of sorry, I'm working, or there's the kids, and to find somebody who cared about threading that needle. Tough.
Yeah. It's tough. And then a lot of gay men don't want kids.
Yeah. Okay.
It's not something, you know, like it's in theory they do, but then when push comes to shove and they see what it's like, they want to like close up their lofts and go to Puerto Vallarta on the weekend. Like they're not.
Yeah.
You know? So there was that layer as well. And then it was like, you know, finding someone that, you know, I was in Vaughan, like at that point I was in Vaughan. I wasn't downtown. So like the gay end, like, so it's finding someone that's like, mm-hmm. Hey, can you come up to Vaughan too for dinner? Like, so we're like 10 minutes from the house because I need to, in case I need to pop back home.
Yeah.
And then, it's just like, I hated it.
What was different when you met your now fiance? Did you know it was different? Was this somebody who knew they wanted kids and they were ready to step into it? Or like, how did this all happen?
So we actually met before the girls were born. So before I closed up shop in the Middle East, I came to Toronto. I was working on a couple shows here in Toronto, but I had to go back to the Middle East to close up shop. So we met, we dated, but he's like on his end, he's like, here's this guy who's like going back to the Middle East, mm-hmm. is coming here with twins. Like, so for him, it was like, where do I go? Like, it was a lot, right? So then we broke up, and then 2 years later he came crawling back. So I love to say that, but he hates when I say that, but no, he did. He called back, and I knew because he was just different. Like, he got it. First of all, he's very Italian, from a very Italian family, the same as me. We're culturally, we're exactly the same. We were brought up the same. The term family means the same thing to us. He just got it. He'd be like, okay, you know what? Put the girls to bed and then I'll bring dinner.
Oh, like, wow.
You know what I mean? Like things like that.
Yeah.
And even at first, even dating is like, when do you introduce them to the kids? Like,
yeah, of course.
That's a tough decision as well. Right. Yeah. So he got that. And not just that, when you introduce them to your Instagram family, like,
oh,
and that's another layer that I had on Instagram. And so people were like, either they loved it or they're like, absolutely not. I want nothing to do with it. So, you know, he's very quiet and he's very like shy. Like, he's not like, even his family, they're very like silent and not very loud, but he got it. He got it. And he got my work. And he got like, you know, he like, now he tells me too, he's like, you haven't posted it in a while. It's time you post.
Or
like, I mean, he gets it. And even when he finally met the girls, like, we did it at like a fair where, you know, he came with balloons.
Yeah.
A lot of people. So they, you know, they met him with like this whole confusion and like it's a fair and rides and cotton candy.
So many distractions.
So slowly. And I'm lucky that the girls were very young when they met him. So they don't know any different. They don't know life. Like, I just wrote a book and he's obviously not in it.
Yeah.
And so even the girls, when I read it to the girls, they were like, well, where's Frankie? Like, why isn't Frankie in the book? It's like, you know, because in their minds, he's been there. Right. So
that's actually really smart. Lucky though.
That way. Yeah,
I had the same thing. My kids, I was actually only friends with my now husband, but we were dating and I definitely liked him. And we went out like as a group and met him bowling. So we all went bowling. And I remember and maybe this just speaks to my like financial situation at the time. They were so blown away that he gave them $2 to use the claw machine. That they were like, Mom, you know who you should date? And I'm like, it cost him $2 to get my kids to immediately gun for him. They were like, you know who we really like? We know who you should marry. And I was like, you just met him. They were like, it was perfect because we were in a group setting. It wasn't like introducing somebody like big and important. They just fell for him because it was sort of like chaos, but they got to know him on less like cool, fun level. And then it was just like, oh, we love that guy. Like, is he going to come more? Are we going to do this? Are we going to do that? And so my kids were older. Like, they were very aware of everything. So I love that you and I both have a very first introduction story where it was like, go do something fun. And it works so well. And so, okay, let's talk about the book then. Is the book out? Is it being written? Like, what's going on?
The book is coming out on Saturday is the launch.
Oh my gosh. So by the time this is out, this will already be out. So that's even more exciting. This is already out.
So yes. Yeah, we're doing the launch at Indigo. And
amazing.
And nothing. It's just, it's a story that I told the girls since they were born. It's a story that, I mean, the girls tell me all the time. Could tell us the story of Nonna and Papa going to Kenya. And so it was kind of like that. And then I was like, you know what? There's not that many books on surrogacy. So
yes,
it's our story told mm-hmm. to children in a children's way that they could understand, right? And it also shows diverse families. It shows that love is love and it doesn't matter what your family is. You could have nonna and nonno, you could have two moms, you could have two dads, you could have one dad, it doesn't matter. As long as you have love, that's what's important. So yeah, so I wrote it. More also for them, like when I read it to them, you should have seen, they were like, oh, they were so proud and they were so happy. And they're like, oh my God, that's Nonna. Look, that's like, so it was just really, really cute. And yeah, so yeah, we're doing the launch soon and I'm nervous about it. I'm scared. I'm going to be like me and the girls and Frank will be the only one at Indigo, but.
Oh my gosh. We'll I feel that. I always am like, nobody's going to show up. Nobody's going to come. You get in your head about it. But honestly, like, then you got to come back down to the roots of it. Even if one kid came and one family came, and children's minds are so open. So to think about the ripple effects of storytelling to a child and how that can like shape their hearts and minds for the rest of their life, the fact that they could be loving and understanding when they meet somebody who was born via surrogacy, regardless of the parental backgrounds, like when they meet somebody who was born via IVF and they understand all of these elements, this is more and more common than we've ever seen before. And I think it's so important that kids understand that, because they're born into constructs of, or like I grew up in like the construct of like mom, dad, you marry, have kids. So to grow up and then sort of be like jolted in, oh, there's like different families that are built different ways. And now that's so much more common. But the core is love. Family is what builds love. I was somebody who never imagined I'd be divorced or have a blended family, and sort of having to redefine what family is, and then really coming to understand that like the coined term is a broken family, but for me, it's so whole. And that's the story that I want them to move forward with. Your girls are now echoing a beautiful story of love, and that's what you're putting out. So if it is one kid that shows up or one parent that shows up, like that ripple effect is so strong and so real, but also your community loves you and you have been such a supportive person for so many people online, and you've been doing it so well in such a fun, positive way. You're a very fun person to follow. I will say that. And I'd love for you to sort of share, first of all, the name of the book so people can look it up and where they can follow you and find you online as well.
Well, the book is called The Twin Diaries, Stella and Mia Meet Papa, and it's going to be a series. So it's going to be The Twin Diaries, and each book will be a milestone in the baby's lives growing up. And that's going to be on Amazon or Indigo. And yeah, you can find me on thedaddiaries.ca on Instagram or thedaddiaries.com, my website. And yeah.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much. And I'm going to have everything in the show notes for you all as well that are listening so that you can check them out for yourself in this cute, adorable family. The girls are so adorable. I've loved watching them grow up. They're just so cute. So thank you for everything. Thanks for sharing your story. Thanks for going back into one of the hardest times and really bringing to life a very unique story in building a family. I appreciate you. I know it's not easy to show up. I know it's not easy to share your story all the time, especially in today's age, but I've got your back. We love you. We're all here to watch your family thrive and grow and be so full of love and the love you put out in this world. So thanks for everything you do.
Thank you. Thank you. And thank you for the platform, because I think it is very important that people do hear this these stories, these types mm-hmm. of stories, especially in today's day and age.
Yes.
And yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I'm excited for this episode. So everyone listening, we'll see you next week. Thank you so much for listening all the way through this episode. If you've made it this far, I have one more little thing to share with you. Did you know that I actually have a photo and video editing app? So many people were surprised to hear that I have one, but it's actually been around for a little while, and you can join over 200,000 of the Papaya community by downloading my free app,
Pink Papaya on iOS. While so many apps focus on changing your appearance, Pink Papaya is all about celebrating yourself for exactly who you are and expressing your creativity and your storytelling with nearly 50 free filters and tools. Find us on social and share your edits as well. We might just share them too. So tag me as well at Pink Papaya App. Just had to share that with you, especially as the springtime's coming. We've got some really cool things happening in there and so much more coming. Check it out at Pink Papaya App. Thanks so much for listening and have a great day.
Well, friends, thank you so much for tuning in and listening to today's episode. For more information on this episode, check out the show notes or find us on Instagram at The Papaya Podcast. And if you loved what you just listened to or know somebody who would, please share it. Simply screenshot today's episode in the podcast app and share it to your Instagram stories. And don't forget to tag us. Last but not least, if you'd like to lend your personal support to the podcast, take a moment and leave a review on iTunes. We would be oh so grateful. Tune in next week for a fresh new episode of the Papaya Podcast, and we'll see you then.
Please note that this episode may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products and services. Individuals on the show may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to in this episode.